Hello, everyone. You are listening to Omnitalk's Retail Fast Five, brought to you in partnership with the A&M Consumer and Retail Group, Avalara, Wiliot, TGW, and Sezzle. Ranked in the top 10% of all podcasts globally and currently ranked the number one podcast in all of retail by FeedSpot, the Retail Fast Five is a podcast that we hope makes you feel a little smarter, but more importantly, Chris, a little happier each week, too.
Yes, indeed.
Today is March 19th, 2024. I'm one of your hosts, Ann Mazinga.
And I'm one of your other hosts, Chris Walton.
We're here once again to discuss the most important headlines from the past week that highlight how the physical, digital, and human elements of retail are coming together to shape the future. Now, Chris, our audience listening to this podcast will not realize that, but those viewing this podcast will realize that we are in a little different spot yet again.
Yes, yes. We are on Shop Talk's TV. Shop Talk TV. We're live on Shop Talk TV being broadcast on multiple levels of the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino. It's a first for us.
We're
I'm loving
like,
it.
It's kind of like when you land at the Vegas airport and you see all the
It's exactly like that.
Come see David Copperfield, yeah. Chris Angel, take your breath away. Yeah. But it's just Omnitalk Retail.
How'd it go though? Yeah,
Take your breath away.
Right, there you go. Yes, exactly like that. Exactly like that.
Anna. I don't know. Something like that.
And I was thinking about this morning, I think this is what I'm going to call the Cobweb podcast because I think you and I have been at Vegas now for seven out of the last 10 days.
We have a Vegas residency, and I think what's happened.
Yeah, and I've got some cobwebs to shake off, and I'm hoping this podcast helps shake them off here pretty well.
Likewise. But we've had such great content that we've been able to put out so far. Shop Talk has been just one of our most exciting conferences, as it is every single year. But Chris, I mean, let's tell the audience a little bit about some of the content that we put out here so far.
Yeah, so I want to make sure I get this right, too, so I'm going to make sure I read everyone's names that we interviewed yesterday. But we had a banger lineup, Ann, is what I put on it.
Yeah.
Yesterday, so we interviewed Lisa Roth, the Chief Marketing Officer of Target.
Mm-hmm.
We also interviewed Catherine Mazza, the new SVP of Hy-Vee Red Media. She's been on the job,
Three weeks,
less than a month.
Yeah.
One of our fan favorites, Rena Hirsch, the new VP of Walmart Go Local, stopped by again.
Yeah.
And then one of my personal favorites from the day was John Alfernis, the Chief Product Officer
right.
at Walmart. He was the thing I love about whenever we interview Walmart people too, particularly, they are very real in terms of how they talk about what they're doing about their business.
Well, they have a lot of use cases to talk about too. It helps when you're putting things into practice.
Yeah. That's but you know, the biggest company in the US, being real about how they're trying to transform is just really great. And then we also had Chris Rupp, the Chief Customer Officer of Victoria's Secret, and then Alicia LaBeouf, the head of industry, retail, and e-commerce at Meta. And all of those interviews were done with the help and partnership of Meta, too.
Yes.
He's also a key sponsor here for Shop Talk TV as well.
Well, Chris, should we give the listeners what they're here for? Should we give them the retail headlines of the week that we've distilled down into just five?
Just five headlines? I think you could twist my arm into doing that, Ann. All right, let's do it. So we've got news live right from Shop Talk TV on Target selling one of its children's apparel lines to Hudson Bay in Canada.
Yep.
I can't wait to talk about that. Walmart Commerce Technologies extending its reach by offering new AI logistics technology to other retailers.
Mm-hmm.
Simon Property's new $400 million investment plan to refashion the first indoor shopping mall in history, believe it or not, which also happens to be, a quarter of a mile from our house back home in Minneapolis?
Yes.
And then both Dollar General and Target are appearing to be cutting back on self-checkout in their stores. But we begin today with a bold new strategy from Macy's. Ann?
That's right, Chris. Headline number one, Macy's unveiled a new 3-point transformation plan to combat sliding market share. And Chris, this time it's called the Bold New Chapter. According to Retail Dive, one part of the plan will lean heavily into supply chain. Macy's plans to close distribution centers, increase automation, and implement other tactics that help the corporation improve inventory, productivity, and ultimately sales, the corporation's CFO and COO, Adrian Mitchell, said in a Q4 earnings call. Altogether, Mitchell said supply chain efforts should result in $100 million in cost savings in the current fiscal year, eventually rising to annual run rate savings of some $235 million by 2026. Now, Chris, Macy's CEO Tony Spring was just on stage here yesterday at Shop Talk. A lot of people are talking about that session. Where did it leave you, and how do you feel about this headline for Macy's about their focus on the three-point plan?
Yeah, I mean, God, there's a lot to cover on this topic. I mean, if I look at that, if I take the headline first, which I think is where I'd want to start, is I look at the headline, and then I look at the plan that Spring outlined, too, which was a lot about making sure the Macy's brand, the flagship Macy's banner, is rejuvenated.
Yeah.
So I kind of question how the investment in supply chain is really going to enable that to happen.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm curious from the point of view of the CFO, the COO, Adrian, who actually is a former colleague of ours at Target.
Yeah.
I'm curious how you're aligning the assets to do that with this type of investment. Because I feel like this is a little bit of, you know, kind of chasing a fool's errand if you don't get the Macy's flagship righted. So that's one question I have. The other question I had listening to the speech the other day is, and I put this out on social media, is he was talking a lot about trying to re-enliven the national heritage that Macy's has as a brand.
Right.
And I was sitting next to you and I was like, does Macy's really have a national heritage? And so I put this out. I said, like, you know, for me growing up in Arizona, we didn't even have Macy's.
Yeah, we didn't either until they bought Marshall Fields and Dayton's. Yeah.
Yeah, I moved to Minnesota and they didn't have it there either. Yeah. And so I said that. So I was like, does Macy's even have this? Or are we just conflating that because of the fact that it's in New York? Things in New York get a lot of attention and we want to feel that way.
Yeah.
And I was surprised by the feedback that came back because a lot of people shared that same sentiment. Like, some people are like, yeah, I grew up in Oregon and I had these brands. I grew up in the East, in Boston. I had Jordan Marsh and all these other things. And so like, I was kind of struck by that and said, like, yeah, maybe there is anything here, which gets me back to the point too, which we've talked a lot about on the show, which is, you know, I think I wouldn't be surprised to still see somebody come in here. They start to divest the Macy's portion, go after the real estate side of it, spin off Bloomingdale's, Blue Mercury, keep that going. There's still a good business there. That's what I think we'll still see here, but time will tell.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with you. I think for me, the biggest thing that I took away from Tony's presentation and I think from this announcement that we just read about for the first headline, it's still coming down to the stores for me. And I think that there's not enough discussion about how you're going to improve the Macy's shopping experience. Like, he did mention that one of the investments they're planning on making is in more store associates. And my question would be, like, aren't you already doing that? Aren't you already trying to, like, every Macy's store that you walk into, they're trying to hire for those roles? And especially if they're pushing into more luxury, like they're talking about doing, like, you're going to have to provide a more white glove, hands-on experience for your consumers, and the store is going to have to look that way. And so for me, I think that's a tall order.
Definitely taller than when he did it at Bloomingdale's.
For sure, for sure. And the brand, I think the Macy's brand, while in some consumers' minds might be nostalgic and there's like brand equity there, I agree with you. I think that brand equity has really started to slip over the course of the last few years. And I think to make this thing turn around, he said the quote, you know, there's a reason that the rear view mirror is smaller than the windshield, which is actually Jelly Rolls from the Grammys this past couple weekends ago. I think that to me is still going to be a real stretch for Macy's to come back from this. And if more power to him. I mean, I got to give the guy credit for getting on stage with all that he's faced with back at the office in New York. So
yeah, that's the last point, though, that kind of rubs me the wrong way a little bit, too. Like, guy's a CEO. Like, that's his job. That's what he's supposed to do.
Yeah, right.
And the other part I have about the presentation, too, is, like, aside from the store closures, which are kind of forced at this point in a lot of ways, like, what else are you going to do? The overall tenets of the presentation, I think I could say the same for any retailer out there.
Yeah.
I've seen that presentation 100 times. Mm-hmm. And so there was nothing truly differentiating about it. It was just kind of, it felt like a lot of hope again that there is something that can be re-enlivened in Macy's. And I just questioned that. So
right. Which, I mean, Tom Kingsbury, CEO of Kohl's, was just on stage today too. And I think that was interesting to hear his perspective conversely, because they have invested a lot more in bringing Sephora in, bringing in these repeat trip drivers. That
different
I think,
starting point.
Right.
Yeah, and did that resonate more with you, though? Because it did with me. Like, fact that baby's an untapped business for him. He has experience doing that at Burlington.
Yeah.
They're going after home in a bigger way, which, probably is some opportunity there, too. They've got the Sephora expansion. Like, they're already in strip malls, to the point that he was making too, relative to Macy's trying to get into strip malls. I just found that more compelling. I still think they have a tough battle in front of them, but would you agree?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that's you couldn't help but kind of compare and contrast the two again.
And Melissa Repko was trying to, too.
Right. But I think yes, I think the Babies R Us move, great strategy. Macy's Toys R Us, yes, but what are your toy occasions versus what are your baby occasions? So I think, they're still going to be in close competition, but I think both of them have big jobs ahead.
Yep, yeah, for sure. All right, let's keep rolling because this next headline is one I'm really excited to talk about. Headline number two, Target's Cat and Jack kids apparel is headed to Hudson's Bay in Canada. According to Retail Dive, Target's Cat and Jack children's apparel brand debuted last Thursday in most of Canadian retailer Hudson Bay's 82 physical stores, along with the retailer's online store. The move puts a popular Target-owned brand back into Canada nearly a decade after the retailer closed all of its big box stores and withdrew from the country. For perspective, Cat and Jack has grown to a $3 billion brand since its 2016 launch, and it now sells over 300 million units annually, which, according to Target, equates to over 8 items sold for every child under 12 years old in the U.S. Fun fact, Anne.
Yeah.
So my question for you is this. Pretty notable move here.
Mm-hmm.
I think this, from my knowledge, this is the first time Target has been acting like a brand manufacturer and a wholesaler for the first time. So do you like what they're doing here?
You know, I do. I think that it makes a lot of sense for there to be another brand, especially like we were talking about when this first came out. Like there is a style and a design and a quality to the Target Cat, especially the Cat and Jack line, that I think is unique, and it's a brand that is at a lower price point for consumers. That also doesn't have, for me as a former mom, I have to say, like, I appreciate the Cat and Jack because it didn't have the, like, mommy's little slugger or whatever the thing is on it that you see on so much of the other competitors in that space. Like, it actually had a design and, like, style to it. And so I think that there's a lot of opportunity for another competitor in that space to go up against the Carters or the other baby lines in that space. Especially with a consumer that's tending to trade down, that's looking for a value brand for kids' apparel, something that they grow out of really quickly. And the last thing I'd say is it is a new growth opportunity for Target. I think so.
Okay.
I mean, it's a test.
Let's play this out. Let's play this out.
It's a test. So I think there is, we've been talking a lot about how, you know, they launched the Circle 360 rebrand of their loyalty program. Is that a really true growth opportunity for Target? Whereas I think this is actually testing something that could bring in, if it works, could bring in new revenue for Target. But something tells me that you're not in agreement. So what are your thoughts? You're the merchant of the two of us.
I
need your perspective.
I think conceptually that could be what's here, but I don't like this that much.
Okay, why?
And the reason for it is when I think about how does it play out, right? So
First
of all, it's a safe play, right? You're doing this in Canada in an 80-store chain. So you're just trialing it out. You're going to see how it works. You're going to understand the dynamics of, yeah, I mean, you've never been a wholesaler before.
Right.
So you have to figure out how to do that,
which
takes overhead, takes cost, and you can't just do it overnight. So you're going to learn that. But my thing is like, and they've actually been trying this overseas in China too with Alibaba. This started stops with that a lot of times too. But my question for you is what's the end game here?
Yeah.
And what does Target have the guts to do? And even if they have the guts to do it, what does that look like? So if you really want this to be the billion-dollar growth opportunity, that means you're probably going to have to place it on Amazon at some point.
Right.
Or you're going to have to take your home furnishings and put them on Wayfair. And then if you're going to do that, my question is then twofold. One, why as a Target shopper do I want to find Target products on Amazon when I can just go to Target to begin with? And do I want that as a Target shopper?
Yeah.
And then why, or as a Target brand, would I want my shoppers to do that? And then two, why would I want to pay the commission on the Amazon sale to have my customer do that? So like, I don't understand where this goes ultimately in the long term.
Yeah.
As a strategy. That's why I think it's kind of a nice thing to talk about right now, but I think it's a false start.
I agree, but I think you look at Target, what do they have, 1,400 stores in the U.S. now, or roughly 1,400 stores? You compare that with one of their largest competitors, Walmart, who has almost, you know, more than twice that amount of stores, and perhaps it could get them, you know, more penetration around the country if they are going into some of these other retailers with some of their brands. for the people who are looking for that one stop. You know, they want those products. They want that alternative offering with high style, high design that targets lines of products they're giving them in more places. Like, it could be. But I do agree with you.
Target's near 95% of the U.S. population already.
Well, yeah. I mean,
2,000 stores. They've got the online business. The omnichannel retailer. I don't know. I push you on that one.
I don't know. But I think the last thing that you did bring up that for me was important is, like, the real allure of the Cat and Jack brand for me, like, as a consumer, and then I think with a lot of other shoppers, is that it's also part of the one-stop shop of a Target.
Exactly.
So I think that that's the other part, that if this does not work for them, that may be a reason, like, just because it had that love, yes, and that you know, interest, and consumers were buying 8 items per child every so many months, like,
yeah,
perhaps that's because of the convenience of, I'm also doing my grocery shopping, I'm getting my cleaning supplies, I'm getting the kids' school,
yes,
stuff, like, all in,
yes,
one trip.
And which is an important point, which is why, you know me, you saw me smile when I said it's a $3 billion brand.
Yes.
It's a $3 billion brand because it's in a Target store. It's not a $3 billion brand because it's a brand like everything else that has been distributed in wholesale to other retailers.
Right.
That's a very important distinction that I think people oftentimes forget when talking about Target's brands and how good they are at building them.
Right.
It's,
well,
a different calculus.
Yes, we are in Vegas, Chris, so perhaps we should put a wager on what we think will happen with this.
Yeah, I'm ready for that, Anne.
Okay.
You name the price.
All right. On to headline number 3. Walmart plans to offer its AI logistics tech to other businesses, Chris.
Yes.
According to investing.com, Walmart has announced the release of its in-house developed AI-powered logistics technology, Route Optimization, to other businesses as a software as a service solution. Route Optimization is designed to assist businesses in improving the delivery of products to stores, a critical component in maintaining stock levels that meet customer demand. The technology allows for the automation of route mapping, taking into account multiple factors such as time, location, and store delivery windows. Walmart's decision to offer this technology to other businesses stems from its own success in reducing emissions and improving inventory availability. By leveraging route optimization, Walmart has reportedly eliminated 30 million unnecessary miles, avoiding 94 million pounds of CO2 emissions. This initiative also marks Walmart's second foray into offering turnkey white label solutions to other companies, following Store Assist, another SaaS technology that supports local fulfillment operations. Chris, this is also the A&M put you on the spot question, where
All
we
right.
partner with the Alvarez & Marsal Consumer and Retail Group to get their opinions and their questions for us on these headlines of the week. So Chris,
yes,
A&M wants to know, post-pandemic, several mid-sized retailers have attempted shared logistics platforms that haven't taken. What makes Walmart's route optimization inherently different and, if you believe so, more likely to succeed?
Yeah, I think it's apples and oranges, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when I look at, like, Quiet Logistics that American Eagle was doing that we talked about on a recent show,
yeah,
it's a totally different thing. You know, this is software. That's essentially what they're selling here. This
yep.
is not, they're not selling the actual fulfillment capabilities, the hard side of the business. So this is really different. And I think, you know, I think there's a great contrast in relation to the last story too. When we talk
yeah.
about where are the real growth opportunities, the thing I salute Walmart for is Walmart Commerce Technologies and how they're approaching this. Like, you can scale software.
Yeah.
And Walmart knows how to do things. They've got the Store Assist, they've got this capability. Talked to Anshu Bardwaj about this a lot. We're going to have her on our webinar in May,
yep.
our Ask an Expert. She's coming on to talk about all the things that they're doing in this space. So I'm really thrilled to talk to her about this. Because there's an opportunity here, especially when you look at the European market. Like, people in the U.S. are probably a little bit more afraid to go with Walmart Commerce Technologies,
yeah.
given what Walmart is. But in Europe, that problem is kind of different. And that's why you're seeing its Store Assist start over there, too.
Yeah.
Because that's where the growth is. So I think it's completely apples to oranges comparison that A&M is referencing here. And it's a real opportunity here. And I wish other companies like Target in the last example would take this route, because those guys know how to do retail at scale and have developed capabilities and software over time to make that happen. And I think it's about time we saw somebody do this, with the exception of Amazon. Like,
yeah.
Amazon shouldn't be the only one putting these types of things in a market from how they know how to do retail.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think from my perspective, when we interviewed Rena Hurst yesterday at Walmart
yeah.
Go Local, and that was
very
really
similar.
And John Alfernis, the chief product officer at Walmart. But I think There's something else about Walmart that feels inherently different when you're thinking about other retailers using this versus Amazon for me. And that's like this different culture of innovation, of really being a brand with enough volume and enough store. Like, because of their store network in the U.S., I think just understanding how to route and get products from point A to point B, how to optimize those vehicles that they already have going, again, to over 4,000 stores across the U.S. Like, they know how to do logistics, and they know that, you know, all the way back to like requirements for their item data, to know like how full can we get the boxes, how full can we get the containers, like all this information that they've been gathering for their own retail operation helps give them an edge of how to provide, you know, these services or to completely fill and optimize their deliveries for other retailers too. And because of that innovation culture, that like, not underdog, I don't know, it just feels different to me.
I think what you're hitting on, I think it's a great point that you're hitting on. I think what you're hitting on to me is like, is they know how to run stores.
Yes.
So start taking advantage of the fact that you know how to do that. Amazon doesn't.
Right.
So take advantage of the fact that you know how to do that. Sell the software that you've developed over time to do that to other people and help them do it as well.
Right.
That's where the growth is, right? That's essentially what you're saying.
Right.
And that's really profound when you think about it that way. Well, Amazon can't do this.
Yeah, and I think the other thing too is like when we were talking to Rena yesterday, like if you're one of the mom and pop stores that are using Go Local, you're thinking about like whether you're going to go with Amazon to do this, because Amazon has a fulfillment service also, whether you're going to go with Walmart to do that, it's scary.
It's
but
Target.
But I don't know that these mom and pops and some of the other smaller business too that really can leverage the advantages from a Go Local or from like the route optimization perhaps from Walmart. But I don't know that they have another choice to stay competitive, because all those small businesses like Rena we were talking to yesterday, like if they aren't going to be able to offer same-day delivery, if they aren't going to be able to do the same types of things that these bigger retailers are able to do, they're going to die out. And no communities want that. And no, most consumers don't want that either. They still want that unique shopping experience. They want their communities to thrive because of these but they need to have this new technology. They need to have access to somebody that has bigger operations, bigger skill sets, and bigger just the capabilities to do more.
All right, let's keep moving. Headline number 4, mall giant Simon Property Group is spearheading a $400 million spending spree to make Southdale Center in suburban Minneapolis much more than just shopping. According to the Wall Street Journal, over the past dozen years, Simon has built a growing list of amenities in remote corners of Southdale's parking lot, including luxury apartments, an extended stay hotel, and my personal favorite, and a Shake Shack.
Yes.
Which of those is not like the other? It also knocked down a JCPenney and replaced it with a high-end fitness center and co-working space from Lifetime Fitness. And it now plans to add an upscale grocer and a high-tech mini-golf operator and a cluster of luxury shops from retailers like Gucci, Burberry, and Moncler, in what was also a previously defunct department store space, which I think was Herberger's, right, Ann, if I'm not mistaken?
Yep.
And this mall, Southdale, is historically important because it was the first indoor shopping mall ever, and it is also 5 minutes from both of our houses, as I said at the outset. So are you buying into this being the mall of the future, as the Wall Street Journal claimed in its headline?
Not at all.
No. Why not?
I don't understand what is futuristic about this mall. Like, I mean, we've been in it before. I think the biggest news for me is that of all the places, you think Minnesota, we're known for Mall of America, one of the biggest, you know, tourist attractions in the country. And we're known for, like, we have an A mall across the street from this that is, like, one of our highest-end luxury malls. This is the highest-earning zip code in the entire state of Minnesota.
This is pulling those tenants out of, actually, too.
Yes. So to me, I'm like, when I first read this, I was like, okay, did Simon Properties just, you know, hand this story to the Wall Street Journal on a spoon, or what happened here? Because calling this the mall of the future seems like the absolute wrong title to be giving it. I mean, because there's a gym, because there's a grocery store, like, I don't understand what makes it futuristic. Yes, it's the property is valuable. Like, it goes back to what we've talked about a million times on this show. Like, yeah. Malls are in the locations that they are for a reason. They have access to thousands of rooftops. They're, like, on main transit lines. You can get people to work there. You can get people to shop there. But nothing about this, it makes sense to me in the first place and then makes sense to me as a mall of the future. Like, I'm not going to be going to buy a Gucci handbag and then go get my groceries. I don't know who's on that shopping trip type, but apparently it's where the future is going, yeah. Chris. But what do you think?
No, I think it's funny. I agree with you. I mean, regardless of whether or not you're going to do that, I mean, this idea is not new. We've seen this before. It's just the high-end mall with the grocery store and a gym. Like you said, like, that's what it is. I mean, we've seen this before. It's just a real estate play, essentially. It's a portfolio reoptimization of the space. But it's not the mall of the future as I think either of us envision, right? When I think mall of the future, I think a mall that has a personality. It has a personality in the community. It potentially has its own Twitter or X feed or Facebook page, and you can go and interact with it. It's got a marketplace that you can transact in. Potentially in the long run, even has like a loyalty app that you can use to shop every store in the mall, and you can get the points for, you know, frequenting the mall. Like, there's so many other, Jesse Michael, a fan of our show, loves to talk about this stuff with us. And like, there's so many other aspects to this that could be futuristic if they were in play, and they're not here. And so this is the farthest thing from it, I think.
Well, and then you have people like Macy's on stage here talking about getting away from the mall. So I mean, it's like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I don't know.
I don't think it's bad. I just think it's a little hyperbole.
No, it's fine. But it's like, at this point in time, like, all of these things are segmented. There's no, like you're saying, like, even curbside pickup. Like, we're not even talking about one curbside pickup for this mall or, like, other things that you would think would be components of my idea of the store of the future. But I guess we'll
see.
True omnichannel.
Inception of the mall.
Yes. All right, Chris, let's go to headline number 5. Dollar General and Target this past week both announced plans to reduce self-checkout in their stores. According to payments.com, Dollar General is cutting back on its offering of self-checkout options, saying it is doing so to improve the customer experience and to reduce inventory shrink. In 9,000 of its approximately 14,000 stores equipped with self-checkout, Dollar General is immediately converting some or all of the self-checkout registers to assisted checkout options. The goal in those stores is to drive customers to staffed registers first and to use assisted checkout options only when traffic is high and lines are long. In the remaining stores with self-checkout, the retailer has begun limiting self-checkout to transactions that include no more than 5 items. In 300 stores, the stores with the highest shrink, Dollar General will completely remove the self-checkout option entirely. In a very similar vein, and according to Axios, starting Tuesday, Target stores nationwide will move to express self-checkout with a limit of 10 items or fewer at the self-service registers. Chris, what are your thoughts on the significant scale back of self-checkout in these two outlets?
Yeah, and then today we saw a similar kind of announcement from Walmart too, mm-hmm. right? They're saying they're going to allow the store manager, we'll probably talk about it next week in more detail, but they're going to allow the store managers to decide which way to do this in their store, like give them the autonomy to decide, you know, how much self-checkout that they want to do
right.
versus cashiers and stuff. So,
I mean, you were in store ops, so yep. like, let's back up and talk about like what this means from a store manager to be yeah. able to do something like that in addition to yeah. the rest of the tasks.
Yeah, actually, I didn't have a chance. I want to query my store managers that I used to work with back in the field. But the thing that sticks out to it for me is like, I don't love the fact that you're leaving it up to the discretion of the store manager.
Okay.
I think it's hard for a store manager to ebb and flow to make that decision each and every day to the hour of the day. It can be very inconsistent because you don't have the same manager on duty all the time.
Okay.
Too. And so I think when I step back from this, I don't have much to say that we haven't talked about on other shows, but I think what I think is like all this is just a stopgap measure right now mm-hmm. that no one really understands the right balance of self-checkout versus man checkout versus assisted checkout in their stores. And so I think we're just going to be in this period of time where it's just going to be kind of chaotic
right.
until we figure that out. And also until we can rip the hardware out of some of these stores
yeah.
and replace it so the customers can have a better visual of where they actually should be going.
Yeah.
Because like even at you know, one of these stores, if you still have the self-checkouts there, people are going to want to use them
right.
and you have to tell them they can't.
Right.
The other point, I don't love having to manage the item counts either. I think that's hard for the team. You got to put your payroll to that too, right. Which also seems counterproductive to
which
me.
Which will so. They really do? Like that's a, I mean, it's like
I've seen
express
them do it.
Lanes
yeah.
that you see at the grocery store. Yeah. I mean, is anybody really manning them and saying like, okay, you have 17 items instead of 15 or whatever. Yeah.
So it's additive work from a payroll perspective, and so I think. But the problem is we've got to get a sense of where the puts and takes with how much self checkout do we want. It's going to be different by chain too, depending on who your demographics are, customer wise, and where your stores are, and all that. So I think we just got to get through this period of like, you know, unfortunately the pandemic forced everyone to do this, mm-hmm. and now we're like, ooh, God, we probably shouldn't have gone so fast on that.
Yeah.
What do we do now? And I just don't think we know the answer yet.
Yeah, I mean it's. You bring up a good point. Like, shrink from these operations is real. Like, we talked about it. Just a reminder for our audience of what we've mentioned before, like Everseen, who I believe one of these retailers is using Dollar General. Right?
Yeah.
You know, they said that the total number of items skipped in a self-checkout right now is closer to 3 items.
Yeah, when there's a miss scan, 3 items are missing.
3 items are missing. And that total loss from those items is now went up from $11 to over $20 now, just over $20. And so this is causing a real impact for those retailers. They have to do something about it. And you know what it actually made me wonder is, are consumers without those self-checkout options, because psychologically it feels like you get through the store, you get in and out. It was put in place so consumers don't have to wait in line. Are we going to see consumers, because of eliminated self-checkouts and because of all these products locked up in a store, are we going to see an increase in buy online, pick up in store in the stores that they start to take out self-checkout and that they have everything else locked up because consumers don't want to wait in line anymore?
Yeah.
Because the more convenient shopping experience for them, especially for those repeat items like deodorant or toothpaste or body wash, like those things that no one has 3 minutes for each of those purchases to wait for and then wait again in behind somebody that's doing their weekly grocery stock up trip. Like, what does that do then? And are the teams also, to your point, prepared to staff more pickers and more like,
well, that's the best case scenario. The worst case scenario is they start going and buying it online and they start going to Amazon, which actually, as you're saying, that could be why Amazon's holding its first ever spring sale.
Right.
Which you know now for the first time don't have to be a Prime member for either. So they might be smelling the blood in the water on this.
Right.
And they might be going after it pretty hard for that exact
reason. This is where it's beneficial for Amazon to not have stores, conversely, from what we were talking about earlier. But
all right. Well, let's should we do the signature lightning round?
Oh, Chris, let's go to the lightning round. All right, Chris. Question number one, Harris Teeter is testing DMV kiosks in more of their grocery stores, which will allow customers to renew their licenses and vehicle registration, among other things, after the success of their initial pilot. Chris, I want to know, what's the worst part of the DMV in your opinion?
The fact that it exists, I think. Like, I can't think of anything
great redeeming. Equalizer.
I can't think of anything redeeming.
I was actually thinking today, I had to wait for Starbucks. I actually came back to a session and came back, and Starbucks still wasn't ready. And I was like, this is like the DMV is the great equalizer. Doesn't matter who you are. If you're the CEO of Macy's, you still have to wait an hour to get your coffee at Starbucks this morning. Yeah.
Although,
you still have to wait in line at the DMV.
Although, if you're the CEO of Macy's, you probably have somebody that can go get it for you, too.
Yeah, well. Yes,
but, all right, question number two. Grey's Anatomy begins its 20th season this week. Yeah, 20th season.
This
is my question. How long did you give that show a watch in your life, and who was your favorite character? How many years did you give that show a watch?
I don't even know, Chris. After Ellen Pompeo died and then
did you watch it up till then?
I think that's
oh my god.
I don't know how
that's
long.
It's like a long time.
Yeah, but I mean, I think McDreamy. It was like great to see him come back as a relevant character again after his like 80s.
I was a McSteamy guy. I like McSteamy. I was more partial than him. You didn't like him? You like Patrick Dempsey.
No. All right.
All right.
Chris, Michaels is officially rolling out birthday parties offering in stores. It's birthday offerings in stores across the U.S. for kids ages 4 through 13. So unfortunately, no birthday party for you this year at Michaels.
Yeah,
the retailer handles all the logistics of the party from start to finish with prices starting at just $299 for up to 8 kids. The retailer can accommodate parties of up to 12 children. Chris, I want to know, where did you spend your favorite childhood birthday party?
Oh, man, that's a good question. Off the top of my head, I think Skateland.
Skateland?
Yeah. You got the roller skates on and you had the big oval and you just went around and around and around.
Yeah, it was called Roller Garden.
You had Roller Garden?
Yeah, Roller Garden was where we went.
We had Skateland. Yeah, that's a good memory, actually.
I know. Yeah. What, did you, like, was there, like, a little, like, girl that you had a crush on? You guys had hands in Skateland?
We had Skateland, like, every, I mean, you and I both went to Catholic school, and so I had, we had, like, first Friday of every month.
Yeah.
We went to Skateland, and yeah, that was, game was on at Skateland. Yeah,
oh
game
gosh.
Was on, and all right, a new list of healthy condiments was just published by USA Today. They are as follows.
Okay.
Guacamole, mustard, balsamic vinegar, salsa, hot sauce.
Okay.
Tzatziki, hummus, and pesto. Of the list I just read, my question is, which one could you live without the least?
Could I live without the least? Like, that I like
the most?
Yeah,
you would hate to see go away.
Hot sauce.
Hot, that's mine, too. Yes.
Yeah, for sure hot sauce. I mean,
which
the rest
one?
Of them.
Which type of hot sauce? Like Tabasco?
Cholula.
I'm a Cholula fan.
I'm more of a
Tabasco guy.
Yeah, sorry. What, you would pick hot sauce, too, though?
Yeah, for sure, 100%.
Okay. All right.
Probably buffalo wing sauce, actually. I'm surprised you didn't pick that one. All right. Well, happy birthday today to Bruce Willis, Clayton Kershaw, and to perhaps the most underappreciated actress of all time, the great Glenn Close, who took ugly crying in the shower in The Big Chill to a whole other level. And remember, if you can only read or listen to one retail blog in the business, make it OmniTalk, the only retail media outlet run by two former executives from a current top 10 U.S. retailer. Our Fast Five podcast is the quickest, fastest rundown of all the week's top news. And our daily newsletter, the Retail Daily Minute, tells you all you need to know each day to stay on top of your game as a retail executive. And also regularly features special content that is exclusive to us and that Ann and I take quite a bit of pride in doing it just for you. Thanks as always for listening in. Please remember to like and leave us a review wherever you happen to listen to your podcast or on YouTube. You can follow us today by simply going to youtube.com/OmniTalkRetail. So until next week, Ann.
Yes.
Yes, until next week.
We're back next week.
We're back
yes,
next week.
We
yes,
are.
I have no idea what day it is. Even like I said,
don't know what
Cobweb
we'll
podcast.
Be in, but it's all right.
But until next week, on behalf of all of us at OmniTalk Retail, be careful out there. And thanks to ShopTalk and ShopTalk TV for allowing us the vehicle to present our podcast to you this week.
Yes, thanks to all of you for joining us here as well. The OmniTalk Fast Five is brought to you in association with the A&M Consumer and Retail Group. The A&M Consumer and Retail Group is a management consulting firm that tackles the most complex challenges and advances its clients, people, and communities toward their maximum potential. CRG brings the experience, tools, and operator-like pragmatism to help retailers and consumer products companies be on the right side of disruption. And Avalara. Avalara makes tax compliance faster, easier, more accurate, and more reliable for 30,000 plus businesses and government customers in over 90 countries. Avalara leverages 1,200 plus signed partner integrations to power tax calculations, document management, tax return filing, and tax content access. Visit avalara.com to improve your compliance journey. And Wiliot. Wiliot's ambient IoT visibility platform powered by battery-free Bluetooth tags eliminates scanning for real-time end-to-end inventory visibility. For more information, head to wiliot.com/omnitalk. And TGW. Revolutionize your grocery supply chain with TGW. Their experts tailor automation solutions to your needs, ensuring you have the edge. Work with TGW before your competition does. Discover more at tgw-group.com. And finally, Sezzle. Sezzle is an innovative buy now, pay later solution that allows shoppers to split purchases into four interest-free payments over 6 weeks. To learn more, visit sezzle.com.